Hey everybody, welcome in. Locked On Orioles Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. Today on a Wednesday, we have a special guest joining us here on the pod for a little bit of a wide-ranging interview as we continue our content path here in this pandemic in the U.S. as we hashtag stay home. And Anders Jorstad, who is the newly named voice of the Frederick Keys. Of course, you remember Jeff Arnold is now with the Big League Ball Club doing games on the radio and TV for Masson and the Orioles radio network. He was the previous voice of the Keys, and now Anders is the one who takes over his job announced a couple days ago. So we have Anders on to talk about, you know, his broadcasting career and what got him to Frederick just a couple years out of college from Hofstra. But we also talk about a wide-ranging array of things. You know, he went to Hofstra, but grew up in Washington, what it's been like to move coast. You know, he worked in Lynchburg, Virginia last year with the Hillcats. We talk a little Hofstra basketball. We talk about what he's doing to pass the time at the moment and a few other things as well. So without further ado, here is our conversation with the new voice of the Frederick Keys, Anders Jorstad. So Anders Jorstad joins us here on the Locked On Orioles podcast, the new broadcast and PR manager for the Orioles single A team, the Frederick Keys. And Anders, thanks so much for taking some time today. Although I will say, I'm sure you, like a lot of us do, have a lot of time to spare at this moment.
Yeah, man. Thanks, Connor. It's a pleasure to be on here. And yeah, it's interesting to find ways to kind of keep yourself busy these days, but that's what we're all doing, I suppose.
So kind of before we get to something like that, obviously I want to talk about you taking the Frederick Keys broadcast and PR job for this season, whenever it will begin. And you know, without getting too much into, obviously, you know, your process or whatever of getting the job, just what's kind of your excitement level to get started as a number one minor league voice, you know, whenever we get to play baseball this summer?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, it's one of those things where, for a long time, it's been a goal of mine, and you've kind of heard, for a lot of people, it takes some time to get here. I've been very lucky to have this situation where I'm here now in my second year in minor league baseball after spending last season with the Lynchburg Hillcats, the Indians affiliate here in the Carolina League. So I'm kind of used to the league a little bit because of that, but, you know, I know the Frederick Keys very well from having been in Frederick for several series and having played against the Keys when I was with the Hillcats. And from talking to Jeff and Jack Plenty, who were with the Keys last year as the two main broadcasters, those two guys are really good friends of mine. So it's kind of an honor to be able to follow in their footsteps and take over the reins in Frederick. But I'm super excited, man. I mean, the Orioles are in a really exciting place right now in terms of the rebuilding process. As a fan, growing up a fan of the Seattle Mariners, I can tell you, you know, what this kind of will lead into next. And it's a very exciting time to be in the Orioles system and seeing kind of the fruits of this rebuild start to bear.
Yeah. And does that add to the excitement of not only get your first, you know, number one job in the minors, but, you know, whenever this season gets played, you guys are going to get a lot of that Delmarva team from last year, which had one of the best pitching rotations in all of minor league baseball. And a lot of those guys should be in Frederick this year.
Yeah, it was really interesting last year kind of following how that was going along, because for a while Lynchburg was in the playoff hunt in the Carolina League in the second half. And, you know, we were sitting there looking at what Delmarva was doing. They had the best record in minor league baseball in terms of winning percentage. And we were just sitting there thinking, you know, the Keys, if they start getting some of those guys, could really start to threaten for that top spot. But they ended up keeping a lot of the guys in Delmarva for the rest of the season. So the Keys didn't really see the success they could have seen because of that. But now, obviously, you'd think a lot of those guys, after spending a full year with the low A team, would come up to high A and would be a part of the Frederick Keys, which is really exciting if you're a Keys fan or if you're an Orioles fan that just wants to see some good baseball being played in the system. The Keys may be the spot for that, with Kyle Moore coming on as the manager after spending the year with Delmarva last year as their manager. He's going to be bringing the same kind of winning ways you would hope. And a lot of the players that were part of that winning run for them will be playing in the Keys uniform this year.
And obviously, you know, a lot of people know you'll be following in the footsteps of someone you just mentioned and Jeff Arnold, who, you know, gets a bigger call up than any player will really get. He goes from Frederick to the big leagues as he gets the
a radio and TV job with the Orioles for this season. So you said you knew him. You know, how excited were you for him, and what kind of words has he given you as you take his last job here in Frederick?
That's the part that makes me a little bit nervous, you know, that I'm following the footsteps of a guy like Jeff, who was really such a great mentor to me last year. In the Carolina League, all the broadcasters are really close to one another, so we get to talk to each other all the time. And, you know, I sat down with Jeff for lunch several times, or I'd have a phone call with him, or I'd text him over the off season or whatever. He was always just super helpful. And he was the kind of guy who would, you know, no matter what the situation, would make time for you, would sit down with you, would listen to your tape, and would kind of go over what your next steps could be. And he was a guy who really instilled a lot of wisdom in me. Not surprised at all as a result of, you know, the hard work and the wisdom that he has, that he was able to get this job with the Orioles. Super exciting for him. And for me, you know, selfishly, he's, you know, not too far away. If I need him or if he needs me, it's the kind of thing where I'll be able to see him, hopefully, over the course of the season. And we'll be able to talk Orioles baseball together, since we'll be in the same system.
Yeah, you guys will be in the same system as you take this job with Frederick, and you'll be working, you know, on the East Coast where you've been, but you're a West Coast guy, right, from Washington. So yeah. What's that kind of transition been like? I know it was, you know, kind of for college and then your professional life to come over here.
Yeah, I lived in the West Coast, or on the West Coast, I guess you would say. I lived in the Seattle suburbs my entire life growing up in a town called Kirkland, Washington. So I grew up an avid Seattle Mariners fan. I lived in that town all through high school. And then I ended up, when I graduated high school, I knew I wanted to be involved in sports media in some way. And so I wanted to go into a big media market. And that's what led me to Hofstra University, right next to New York City, get to be in a big media market there, kind of get to learn what it's like to thrive in that kind of environment, separately from, I mean, Seattle itself is a fairly big media market, but the University of Washington didn't have a broadcasting program. And I knew that was something that I was interested in potentially doing. And so that's what led me to Hofstra. So I kind of, you know, I'm familiar with the East Coast from that. I've lived on the East Coast my whole life since graduating high school, because I lived in Winston-Salem the last couple of years in North Carolina doing work for Learfield IMG College, and obviously with Lynchburg last year as well. So the East Coast is not as unfamiliar to me anymore. In fact, it's kind of weird when I go back home and I'm back on West Coast time and in Seattle visiting my folks. It's kind of you know, I feel like I'm so used to things here on the East Coast that going back feels strange. Waking up and seeing football games at 10 o'clock in the morning kicking off is a strange feeling again, which I think a lot of people on the East Coast aren't really used to the idea of. But it's one of those things that as a West Coaster, you just kind of are used to.
Well, I actually want to ask about that then, because as someone who's lived on the East Coast for my entire life, I always kind of envy people who get to wake up at 10 on a Sunday and the football's already on, or you wake up at 9 on a Saturday and the college football is already on. And then you flip that, you're not up till 1:30 a.m. watching a World Series game. So have you found that sure, it's better to watch sports on the West Coast?
I think everybody wants what they don't have. In that regard, I think everybody on the East Coast is jealous of the fact that, you know, you wake up and you don't have to figure out how to kill 3 hours of your day before the 1 p.m. kickoffs. You can just kind of wake up and you're in your pajamas still, and you know, just flip on the TV and watch some NFL football. But on the West Coast, I mean, the big drawback is that so few things are actually live. I remember when I was back on the West Coast for the 2016 Summer Olympics, we had everything on a 3-hour delay. So all the big events that were happening, if you were on Twitter at all, or if you were online at all, you already knew exactly what was going to happen. And it wasn't as much of a thrill to watch it live, because our local news channels were showing things on a delay. And that happens pretty frequently with award shows as well. And so that's a big drawback too. It feels like when you're on the West Coast that the whole world kind of revolves around the East Coast clock. You know, all the news kind of revolves around the East Coast. You wake up on the West Coast and so much news has already happened, you feel like you've missed, you know, half a news cycle, which is kind of the case. But, you know, then you are up late on the West Coast and there's nothing on. So it's kind of, there's good things and there's bad things with that. So if you're kind of a night owl, you probably prefer living on the East Coast because you get to stay up and sports are still on. But that's not the case if you're out west.
Do you hate stepping on the scale? Maybe it's because you haven't met the right one. A company called Withings produced the world's first smart scale, and they are still the best. In fact, Tom's Guide rated Withings Body Plus the best overall smart scale in 2020. If you're looking to lose weight, Willpower is key, but so is having the right tools. Withings Smart Scales are known for durability and an exceptional user-friendly design. Step-on and data from every weigh-in syncs automatically to the free app for iOS and Android via Wi-Fi or Bluetooth. Lots of smart scales don't have the Wi-Fi option, and it means you need to have your phone on you. But Withings Body Plus gives weight, full body composition, weight trend, even a local weather report. The scale can support up to 8 users and even know who is who. So here's the deal. You can get 25% off a Withings Body Plus right now at withings.com for a very limited time. Go to withings.com, that's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale. That's withings.com/MLB to get 25% off Body Plus Body Composition Scale.
Good point, actually, because you made a good point. Probably people probably want what they don't have, but you mentioned going to Hofstra, so I just wanted to quickly, with the NCAA tournament being canceled, the Pride winning the conference, qualifying for the tournament for the first time since 2001, give me the aura, the mood around the Hofstra fan base, the alumni around that. You know, not only losing March Madness, which everyone's sad about, but especially for a team that hadn't been in almost 20 years, to be knowing they could get there, knowing they could have won a game or two and have it all taken away.
Sure, and I'm one of the most avid Hofstra fans. I don't really want to say that. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there who went to Hofstra who are avid fans. I'm an avid fan, I should say. I watch every game that I can, every game that I'm able to. So I've been following the team for, you know, since I started going to school there. And this year felt different for the team. It felt like they were more cohesive. They didn't really have the kind of star talent they had in the previous years, but they just were a very cohesive bunch, and they were really fun to watch. And they went on an incredible run there toward the end of the regular season where they were winning just pretty much every game they were playing. And then to win that conference title game, it felt like a dream because I had seen two title games since I started going to Hofstra where they were in it close until the end and then blew it. They lost to UNCW in 16, and then last year they lost to Northeastern. And I was at the UNCW game in 16, which was a total heartbreak, and that was a year where they had a lot of good players, and we thought they were going to make it. But this year, having finally won it, it was one of those things where it was like, oh my gosh, I'm finally going to get to watch them in the NCAA tournament, and then for them not to have that, I feel more badly for the players, because there's a couple of those guys who, you know, when I was back at Hofstra, I would interview them. I would ride the bus with them for games when I was calling their basketball games. And I know how hard those guys work and how much they wanted it. And for that to be kind of taken away from them after winning the title, I feel really bad for them. There was a really good Washington Post article up a few days after the cancellation happened where they kind of interviewed some of the players and really the heartbreak that they were feeling in that moment. And that's the kind of thing they're never going to get back. But at the same time, they had a really great season, which is going to go up in the rafters as having won a CAA title. So it's not like the season never happened, but they just won't have had the chance to play in the tournament on the big stage that they wanted to. But, you know, that's one of those things that's a minor consequence of what's going on. It's just unfortunate there's so many layers to this.
Yeah, it was interesting watching them. You know, I'm a huge college hoops guy, and I probably watch way too many games, but a couple of years ago at Maryland, I actually called the Maryland Hofstra game for the Big Ten Network. Watching that game courtside, I thought, this guy, Justin Wright Foreman, I mean, this is one of the best players Maryland's seen, not only from a mid-major opponent, but from any opponent. And it was interesting to see, you know, the year after he's gone, for this team to kind of come together and win the conference. But, you know, those guys like Bowie and Eli Pemberton, I remember them being more like second key guys on that team a couple years ago. But that Hofstra team was good, and there's a whole lot of teams just like them, just feeling like everything just kind of got taken away from them.
And that was my biggest worry after last season, Justin Wright Foreman, who got drafted by the Utah Jazz. What an incredible story. His freshman season played a total of 44 minutes, and then in his sophomore season, it was toward the end of non-conference play when Hofstra was just getting walloped by Kentucky. He went off in the second half and scored something like 20 points in the second half. And every game from then on, he was just an unquestioned star. It was really a remarkable transformation. turned into this guy that became something of a household name and put himself on draft boards and actually ended up getting drafted, which was pretty incredible. Not something that anybody expected when he came in as a freshman. Bowie, who was the star player this year for Hofstra, came in the same graduating class out of high school and was actually the more heralded prospect. Justin Wright Foreman was kind of a secondary piece to that recruiting class and ended up being kind of the star of that class. But I had the same feeling you had where I saw those two guys, Pemberton and Bowie, and I was thinking, oh man, I don't really know if they can really hold the load by themselves, and they were able to, which was really remarkable to see. But that Maryland game, I remember pretty fondly last year because Hofstra, I want to say, led by a point at the half, and I was kind of wondering if they were going to hold on. But of course, Maryland, you know, ended up being the better team in the end. They were a pretty strong team that year too.
So I could probably talk college basketball all day, but we're on the Locked On Orioles podcast. We'll jump back to baseball. And I want to get to you. You know, you said growing up a Mariners fan in Washington, and then you come over to Hofstra. And obviously you've worked in minor league baseball. You talked about with Lynchburg, but where did kind of the baseball love come from? Was it the Mariners? You know, and did you do any baseball in college as well at Hofstra, or where did that kind of come from knowing you wanted to do minor league baseball?
Well, I've been a fan of baseball since the 2009 season, which is very precise, but I wasn't really a big sports fan before that. I got a copy of MLB 2K9, and I just started playing like crazy and ended up getting me hooked on baseball. So that year is kind of when I started watching baseball, but I did start as a Mariners fan at that point. And just kind of ended up getting immersed in the world of baseball. I started to think to myself, what is something that I can do for a job that will make me happy to go to work every day? Which I think is kind of a question that, you know, a lot of people ask when they're getting to that stage, high school, college. You think, okay, what do I actually want to do with my life? And to me, you know, the biggest hobby of mine was baseball, watching baseball, talking about baseball. And so I said, okay, let's try to get involved in sports media. And that kind of led me, as I mentioned before, to Hofstra. I didn't do as much baseball at Hofstra as I did other sports. I was really, I mean, I did every sport pretty much, but I would say I did most of the volleyball games and I did most of the men's basketball games. I did a lot of women's lacrosse as well. And it wasn't like there's no real hierarchy for who gets to do what sport. It's just kind of what people are suited for. And there's a lot of people that went to the school that wanted to do baseball. And because of that, the baseball games got kind of distributed pretty evenly among the bunch. So I didn't get as many baseball games as I got with other sports. And so as a result, I decided to try to hone the craft of my own by going to do summer ball. I went back to Bend, Oregon in the West Coast League. They have a team called the Bend Elks. I was there for 2 years, and that kind of got me more experience calling baseball, which ended up leading me to Lynchburg.
And it's kind of, you know, a career of baseball, but also just wanted to touch quickly on the Learfield IMG College. You know, you said you were living in Winston-Salem for a little bit. Now, none of that is play-by-play, but I know a lot of broadcasters in our business will go and do that, you know, kind of in the baseball off seasons. And what did you get to learn from that, even though you're not, you know, doing any play-by-play while you're there?
Sure. Learfield IMG College is a great place to go for people that are in our industry, you know, young people that want to be broadcasters because of the, you know, the growth of that company, first of all, but also the kind of people that you can make connections with. As you mentioned before, there's a lot of people in our field that go there. And before I went there, I wasn't in minor league baseball. I only knew maybe one or two minor league broadcasters. And so I knew that if I wanted to aid myself in getting a chance to be in the minors, I needed to get to know people. And so being there was, you know, that was a benefit of being there, but another benefit was being involved in sports and being involved in sports broadcasts and also getting to work with the kinds of voices that you get to work with. I worked with Kent State and Western Kentucky my first year. And then this year I was at the University of Texas working with Craig Way. Really great to get to work with those people and get to work with people that have been involved in those broadcasts for years and work in a professional broadcasting environment. And it's, as I mentioned before, kind of a hot spot for broadcasters to be. So, you know, if you want to get in touch with other minor league broadcasters, it's very easy to just go sit down, have a cup of coffee with them and try to discuss where things will go. And that's how you make connections. And just like pretty much every other industry these days, that's how you aid yourself in getting a job going forward. So I was very lucky to have gotten the opportunity to be there for 2 years. It really helped me and it helped me learn about the do's and do nots. And that's the great thing about working as a studio host with those people, with guys like Craig Way, with Randy Anthony, is you get to listen to, you know, the things that they do, and you kind of dissect it in your brain, like, oh, it's interesting that he decided to call it like that, and that's something that I can use in the future. Because as a broadcaster, you're always listening for cues that other broadcasters have been doing in ways that you can kind of steal things here or there to improve your own craft.
So I want to bring it back to Frederick here at the end. We talked about briefly, you know, some Delmarva guys coming up, and obviously the Orioles have one of the more exciting young systems in the minor leagues in baseball. So when this season does get started, do you have your eyes on a couple players who, you know, there might be a chance there in Frederick this year? Obviously, we don't know for sure, but guys you think might be in Frederick this year who you're excited about calling their games this summer?
Sure. I mean, we don't really know who's going to be with the team yet, but there's obviously a lot of really good players in the system that are around those levels that you would hope we see in Frederick at some point this year. Adley Rutschman being there, Grayson Rodriguez being around there, D.L. Hall was there last year. I mean, those are the three top prospects in the Orioles system. And if I am lucky enough to get a chance to call games with those guys, it would be a privilege. But, you know, one of the bigger things, and one of the things that I love about being a minor league broadcaster, is not just those players that everybody knows, but it's the players that people don't know as well, the guys that end up breaking out and becoming, you know, getting to tell those stories of those players who weren't as well known, and you get to know them, and then all of a sudden they have a really good season and put themselves on the map. You know, guys like Mason McCoy from last year, who really had a phenomenal season, got himself bumped up the Double-A buoy, and now is potentially part of the Orioles' future. That's an exciting thing, and to get to see those guys' growth and to see those guys' development. So, you know, I'm excited for whoever the Keys end up getting, because I'm sure whoever it is, there are going to be some great stories to tell.
Yeah, it should be a good season for Frederick, and we're hoping we get as much out of this 2020 baseball season as we can. But until then, you know, everyone kind of staying home here. So for you, Anders, for the people listening, give us a show recommendation, a movie recommendation, or something you're doing to kind of pass the time here. Because I got to be honest, I think everybody's looking to everyone else to get recommendations on things to do as we all try and, you know, stay home and help each other out during this pandemic.
Oh, goodness. I mean, this isn't great for if you're looking for, like, positive, upbeat type of stuff, but I was really into Black Mirror on Netflix when that was out, or I guess it's still out, but when that was coming out with new episodes, that was a big thing for me. I love romantic comedies as well. Me and my buddies just had, like, a little discussion yesterday over what the best romantic comedy was, and maybe a surprise to some people, but we settled on 10 Things I Hate About You. So I may end up booting that one up here pretty soon to try to, you know, get some more uplifting feelings in these times. I think it's always great whenever you can get something that you haven't watched before. I'm really behind. I haven't watched a lot of the big shows that people always talk about as binge-worthy shows, so I'm lucky to have those in my back pocket. And I think that there's probably a reading list of like 15 books I have that I really need to sit down and get going on. So I need to kind of carve through the list at this point as we get ready for the season.
Yeah, well, probably no better time than now to get through the reading list, get through the shows list.
That's and, right.
Hopefully soon enough, baseball is back. But Anders, thanks so much for joining us today, giving us some time, and letting the Orioles fans know who the new voice of the Frederick Keys will be whenever this season begins.
Yeah, thank you, man. A pleasure to be on here.
So again, our thanks to Anders Jorstad, the new voice of the Frederick Keys, for joining us here on the pod today for a really good conversation. You know, obviously, we're going to talk Orioles and we're going to talk Keys, but at this point, you know, try and bring the conversation pretty much anywhere it goes and get to know Anders. And of course, we got a little deep into the Hofstra basketball talk there, but yeah, they were going to make the tournament for the first time in about 20 years, and of course all that shut down with the cancellation and postponement of pretty much everything going on in sports at the moment. But we're going to continue to bring you the Locked On Orioles content. Again, we've got our greatest Oriole of all time bracket still going on. Just wanted to give you an update on that. Remember, the voting all on Twitter at Locked On Orioles. Go there to vote. But we are down to the Sweet 16. Sweet 16 voting starts today. On Wednesday, it'll be Wednesday and Thursday, four matchups Wednesday, four matchups Thursday to get us to the Elite Eight. And here are the Wednesday matchups where you can go right now and vote on Locked On Orioles on Twitter. It's Cal Ripken, the one seed, versus the five seed Nick Markakis. Then we've got the three seed Boog Powell against the two seed Bobby Gritch. Another one seed, Eddie Murray, takes on fourth seeded Manny Machado. And the one that's been the closest so far in voting, the three seed Adam Jones against the two seed Mike Mussina. So make sure to go vote for those Sweet 16 matchups on Locked On Orioles. If you're listening to this a little bit late and you're at the Thursday voting at this point, the other Sweet 16 matchups to vote for: Brooks Robinson versus Melvin Mora, Brady Anderson versus Paul Blair, Jim Palmer versus Ken Singleton, and Frank Robinson versus our Cinderella darling so far, the 10 seed J.J. Hardy, is into the Sweet 16 of the greatest Oriole of all time bracket. And by this time next week, we will have a winner decided. And remember, you can do all the voting on Twitter at Locked On Orioles. Also coming up this week, we're going to get to know another one of the Orioles' new minor league voices, Paul Frichtner, who is coming over to be the number two voice of the Bowie Bay Sox, along with Adam Pohl. He will join us on tomorrow's episode as we'll get to meet him, and we'll talk some things other than Orioles as well. And then we'll also most likely do a mailbag episode this week. If you have any questions or comments about the Orioles, about baseball, about really anything going on, you can send them in via email to lockedonorioles@gmail.com, or you can tweet us those questions at lockedonorioles, or tweet them to me at @ConnorNewcomb_. But again, that's it for today. Remember to vote on this greatest Oriole of all time bracket again on our Twitter account at lockedonorioles. This has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Now tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On MLB.